Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. With school underway and in its first few days, this is often a time that parents are especially important in their children's lives. Whether it's a new school, uncertainty about a teacher or classmates, or just getting off to a good start on classwork, parents are invaluable keeping their kids on the path to success. But what happens when parents are out of the picture due to incarceration? The 2012 State Task Force estimated that around 26,000 Oklahoma school children, about 3.3% of our school-age population, have a parent in state prison. Although that's only an educated guess, no firm statistics are kept by the state. Today we hear about an organization that is devoted to trying to offset the instability that a parent's incarceration can cause. New Hope gets underway today with 10 community-based programs in the city, along with 12 school-based groups at Eugene Field, Emerson, Hawthorne, Kendall Whittier, Mark Twain, and McClure Elementaries in Tulsa, Union's McAuliffe Elementary, and Broken Arrow's Rhodes Elementary. The programs offer anger management, self-esteem, and peer pressure programs, along with sports, arts and crafts, journaling, and discussion groups as well. My guest today is the executive director for New Hope, Lindsay Frey-Geyer. Lindsay Frey-Geyer, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Rich.
Tell us a little bit about the work of New Hope. How did New Hope get started?
Well, New Hope was started as a mission of the Episcopal Church. We have since become an independent 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're a Tulsa-based organization that works with children who have one or both parents in prison. Our mission is to end generational incarceration one child at a time, and we do that by providing a variety of prevention services to children of prisoners.
What are some of the special risks for children who have an incarcerated parent? I mean, we know that inherently makes them at risk for continuing a sort of a generational cycle of being incarcerated. What are the specific risks at, say, elementary age or once they become an adolescent?
Absolutely. So children of prisoners face a lot of risk. They have to give up a lot of things that are really important to them. A number of studies have considered the psychological, emotional, and developmental impact of having a parent in prison on children. And one thing is clear, that when a parent is incarcerated, children suffer. What's interesting is that a number of these studies control for covariates, meaning they control for interacting variables such as poverty or pre-existing disadvantage. And these studies have found that children who have a parent in prison face a far greater risk. They face a risk that's above and beyond children who are living in poverty or face existing disadvantage, and they face a risk that's greater than children who've lost their parents for other reasons. One study found that children of prisoners face three times the risk for adverse outcomes than children who have lost their parents to, say, divorce or death, and five times the risk of children in the general population.
Well, let's talk about what are the things that can help stem that. First of all, I would think a strong familial structure outside of the parent that is incarcerated. How often do you see that? How often is really New Hope the most stable relationship that child has?
Our caregivers and their situations vary. A lot of our caregivers are trying as hard as they can, and they can range from aunt or grandma and grandpa or great-grandma raising the child to the foster care system or the parent that isn't incarcerated, of course. And we really see that New Hope can be that sense of stability in the lives of these kids. We see children shifted from caregiver to caregiver to caregiver, and we may remain the only consistency in the lives of these children. But with that good, the bad, and the ugly that we talked about, the good of that situation is that these kids are resilient and that we can make an impact. And with great risk, there's great opportunity. And that's what's so exciting about the work that we get to do at New Hope, Oklahoma.
And so what sort of things are you doing? I would assume you're doing fun things, but you're also counseling?
Absolutely. Through our after-school programs, we offer support groups for children, and we get to see them come in, and a lot of them maybe have anger or conflict resolution issues, and we can come in and help them grieve the loss of their parents, support them, and provide them a safe environment with positive adults and mentors to grow and learn. And we have a trauma-informed, evidence-based curriculum that's designed specifically for these children to help meet their needs. And we see them, and that's the impact that we're seeing. We see them both anecdotally and statistically increase in their outcomes. And, for example, we work with the OU Center of Applied Research at nonprofit organizations, mm-hmm. and we've seen statistically significant increases in hope in our children in both terms of pathways and agency. So our kids have learned to have goals, that they want to do something with their life, and that they feel that they can find the pathways to get to those goals.
How important is it for the actual incarcerated parent to be supportive of what's going on in this New Hope?
At New Hope, we don't work a lot with the incarcerated parents. We do have holiday parties and write letters to our caregivers, but the situation with each parent varies greatly.
Some where the child has can see their parent fairly regularly, others probably never see them at all.
Absolutely.
They're totally out of the life.
Yes.
Wow, that's really challenging work. And I assume you're seeing all sorts of people cross the spectrum.
We see a lot of children who range from having big behavioral problems and academic problems and problems with substance use and abuse to children who are just missing their parent and want to come into an environment where they don't feel stigmatized or judged. They feel like everyone around them is going through the same thing and they can feel understood.
Now, you're serving a wide variety of ages. I would think that the intervention might have different results when you're working with a late adolescent as opposed to someone of elementary age. Do you tailor your approach for all the various different age groups?
And yes.
What are the success rates when you, say, see a child when he's 15, he or she's 15, as opposed to 6 or 7?
One of the things that we're proudest of is our retention rates, Rich, that we see these kids, not all of them, of course, but see these kids come into our program, and some of them have been with us 8, 9, 10 years, and we get to watch them graduate from high school. This year, we had a number of children graduate from high school. Many of them were the first in their families to complete and get their diploma and go on to post-secondary education. But you're right. The approach with different age groups is very different. We have to tailor it. We tailor our curriculum specifically for the age groups and for the gender sometimes as well, because boys and girls process things very differently. We have a curriculum that we use with elementary age students, middle school students, and then high school students as well. And we incorporate elements that are appropriate for those different age groups.
Once they get to that adolescent age, is that the big goal, to get the high school diploma?
Absolutely, but to also walk away with a sense of stability, a sense of security, a sense of I can make something of myself, and these are my goals, not New Hope's goals, but what do you want for your life, and how can we help you get there? And that might include getting a driver's license. Most of our kids weren't able to have a driver's license, and that hindered them from getting a job, for example. So we set up a program where our kids could come in and get driver's ed for free with a local agency, and helping them with various applications, their FAFSA, their application for college, having them have mentors be able to meet those needs that are specific to juniors and seniors in high school. And the same with our elementary age kids, plugging them in to organizations here in our community that can help with needs that are specific to that age group.
Give us a sense what happens when these kids turn 18 and they age out. They maybe get their high school diploma. Are they going on to college? Are they going to junior college or maybe a technological program? What exactly?
Yes, all of the above. We are so, so proud of our kids. This year, we, like I said, we had a number of kids graduate, and most of them went on to college, actually. We have a lot at TCC. We have some.
That Tulsa Achieves is a great program.
It sure is. It sure is. And some at OSU, NSU, Rogers State. We also have a number in trade school as well. So one of our seniors this year is going to be an auto mechanic, and another one's in beauty school. So we're very proud of the choices that they're making.
So when they age out of this program, hopefully you've given them a set of really strong goals and perhaps the skill sets to negotiate a lot of this stuff without the parental participation.
Right.
Anybody who's sending your kid off to college at this particular point, parents are incredibly involved. And really that first semester and the first year, parents are so important. Is New Hope doing anything once they age out?
That's one of the things that we're working on this year, is a program to specifically mentor our graduates, because we found just that so many of our kids, because we've been that stability in their lives, come back to us and say, so I'm signed up for these classes, but I'm a little confused about how this whole thing works, and I feel lost, and I feel like everyone else knows what's going on but me. And so we work with them one-on-one, and we've gone up to TCC and walked our kids through their classes or helped them with our financial aid, for example. But we're looking to start a program that's specifically tailored to our graduates and having mentors work with them after they graduate, because we do work a lot as their juniors and seniors to prepare them for what their post-secondary school might look like. But of course, once they get there, it's still difficult to navigate.
My guest today is Lindsay Freigeyer, the executive director for New Hope. New Hope is a nonprofit offering services to children with incarcerated parents, and really goes from just the beginning of school age all the way through age 18.
Right, elementary school all the way through high school.
And what are some of the issues you're dealing with, like young children, the kindergartners, first graders, and second graders?
Our kids specifically have a lot of anger issues, and that might be externalized behavioral problems, and that might come out as an internalized behavioral problem, such as depression or anxiety. And we work with these kids to help them get over the loss of their parent and cope with that grief so that they can come out on the other side and find healthy ways to cope with the trauma that they've experienced and with the loss in their life. And by having a place where they can come and learn to control that anger and learn positive strategies for anger management and conflict resolution and learning to choose positive peers and just having a place where they can feel understood. We've seen both anecdotally and statistically that with our elementary age kids, that's so important. And our groups don't necessarily look like they're getting all of that. It's all disguised as fun and games and journaling and discussion and arts and crafts activities.
Give us a sense of how you would work on anger management or impulse control, for that matter, in a fun situation where the kid doesn't know he's learning strategies.
Absolutely. Right. Well, we have wonderful program coordinators and highly qualified staff that are able to run those programs. And we come in with a curriculum and they all start off with a chance to discuss and tell everyone what's going on in your life. And sometimes that's I'm mad at my teacher. And sometimes it turns a little deeper than that, that I'm really worried about my parent and have an environment for them to share. And that just opens it up for that therapeutic element to be there. And from there, we build on a topic. We have a poster board and we talk about different things. And it has an animal on it. And for example, peer pressure, we've got crabs and they're trying to get out of the pot, but they're getting pulled down by other crabs if you've ever seen crabs in a pot. And we use a lot of metaphors and a lot of animals with elementary age kids. And then we play games and we discuss, have you ever had this happen in your life? And what can we do when something like this happens? And really grow with them and giving them the power, because we know that just talking at them isn't going to be that successful, but having them have the opportunity to come up with the answer on their own and then giving them the power to, within the group, share how they've made changes and tell them next week we're going to talk about this again. Everyone come back and let's see how we did this week with whatever the topic at hand was.
And do you find that the kids sort of empower themselves through their peers in the group?
Absolutely. And sometimes we don't even have to say anything. What the most rewarding thing, I think, is whenever they use our language that we've taught them, for example, saying something like, you know, that wasn't positive, or you're using a defense mechanism. Hearing a six-year-old say defense mechanism, of course, is funny, but that's what we're talking about at the time in the group.
Yeah, that is funny. Now, how many sites are you serving here in the Tulsa area? Give us a sense of how much interaction you're having with elementary kids, middle school kids, and high schoolers.
So we serve about 400 children throughout the year and about 200 in our after-school programs. We have community-based programs that are held at Trinity Episcopal Church downtown. Those are on Monday nights, and those are all ages. We're very excited to be able to offer a tutoring program specifically this year for our kids to be able to come back and work with. And then on Tuesday nights in the community, all the kids can come back, whether they're in an elementary school or community-based program, and come back for a night of arts enrichment. And that's especially popular with our kiddos. And we've been able to offer a wide variety of programs thanks to partnerships in our community, like glassblowing with a Tulsa glassblowing studio and arts enrichment with the Zara Center for Arts and Education and pottery and dance and drumming and all a range of services that we're hoping kids are going to learn from and that they otherwise wouldn't be exposed to. And then in the schools, we offer 14 school-based groups in 8 elementary schools in Tulsa Public Schools, Broken Arrow Public Schools, and Union Public Schools. We look at sort of census data and where the most prisoners are and then where we have contacts in schools to.
It's almost like an after-school program.
Yes.
And is it an everyday thing or just a couple times a week or what?
We do have programs every day, but we're not at each site every day. The children have the opportunity to come to us 2 to 3 times a week. Some of them take advantage of that and we see them multiple times per week. And some of the kids we only see once per week. Our goal is to really hold their hand as their parents walk through the criminal justice system and as they walk through maybe the loss of siblings and change schools. We want to be that consistency in their lives in the midst of so much chaos.
One of the big issues, and you just touched on it, is that idea of moving around, whether they're in the foster system or they're moving from relative to relative. Do you try to keep up with them? I mean, how many kids fall through the cracks just from the fact that they're transient in many ways?
They are very transient, and it's possible for our kids to fall through the crack. And sometimes we lose a kid for a month, and then aunt or grandma calls us and says, hey, we switched to this school. Can they keep coming? And we're so excited because we found that child. But we do work very closely. We do home visits, and we have a case management program to work with the families and create that sense of community not only with our kids but also with our caregivers. And that really helps to bridge that gap whenever our kids do change schools or do move around. Caregiver can keep up with us and let us know where our kids are, and we can follow them.
The program is really geared towards the children themselves, but it sounds like the caregiver is a very important element in ultimate success.
Right. So we know that the stability of the child plays such an important role in their success long term and their avoidance of adverse outcomes. So if we can help create a stable environment with that caregiver by working with them to create a budget or by working with them to help with other agencies that could help with some of their needs, from housing to food to really runs the gamut what our family's needs are. We know that that's going to create a more stable environment for our child and ultimately lead to more success for them. And that's why we've started our case management program.
And so you're working with a lot of other different nonprofits to help them with a lot of those areas, right?
Absolutely. Obviously, we can't meet every need. That would be way too much. But there are so many wonderful Tulsa agencies that meet specific needs.
And a lot of times it's somebody like a group like yours saying, here's where you need to go, or here, let me have somebody call you from that group.
Right. And it does make it a little less scary for our families to feel like they're going to this big agency if they have a contact through New Hope where they feel familiar.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk about the retention. You said you were very proud of the retention issues. What sort of retention do you have, say, from a child that comes in at first, second, third grade to those middle school years, which I think would be very difficult, to the high school years? Do you find kids that drop off along the way, or once they get into this program, they want to be a part of it because it's that stable element?
We're very proud of our retention rate, as I said. So over 60% of our kids have been in the program for more than 4 years, which is a great retention rate comparatively to other nonprofits nationally. And one of the things that we do to create that retention rate is offer a variety of programs. And if a kid isn't coming to after school programs, maybe they want to come to summer camp or they want to come to retreats, and we still maintain that contact with the child and still maintain that impact with the child. And we do see kids that go through the program from elementary all the way through high school. And we do see kids, of course, that drop out or that move or that we lose because they're transient. And that's unfortunate. But the vast majority of our kids start the program and stay in the program.
Is age a determinant on how well you're able to retain them, say, if they come in at first, second, third grade, as opposed to sixth or seventh grade or maybe ninth or tenth grade?
Especially for our summer camps, I think our kids get plugged into the summer camps and it's so much fun, and they get to experience horseback riding and canoeing and rappelling and all these things that are outside of what they would normally get to do. So when we get them at an elementary age at camp, they usually won't continue to come back year after year.
Now tell us a little about the summer camps.
We offer 7 sessions of residential and day camps, and we're very proud of our camps. They offer all of the fun things that camps do. The kids get to come and stay the night and be in groups, but we also offer a curriculum, and that's designed specifically for our children of prisoners that sort of mirrors but adds to the curriculum that we offer in after-school programs.
So what sort of things do you add to? I would think during the summertime, their whole lives change quite a bit. They don't have that school as a stabilizing influence. Is the camp sort of designed to sort of help pick up that slack?
Absolutely. And we are able to send them home with food at the end of camp through the community food bank and help meet some of their other needs. But also, camp is a residential setting. So instead of having them for 2 hours or 3 hours, we have them for a long period of time. And their ability to talk about what's going on in their lives and feel comfortable after they've been with us for 5 nights really increases. And so we're able to work with them in a therapeutic setting in a way at camp that we might not get that deep in an after-school program. And that's what's neat, having our counselors there on staff, being able to work with our kids and help meet the needs that they have.
I talked about this a little earlier. What about kids that come into the program at, say, middle school age or high school age? Do you find that it's more difficult to reach them? Does the intervention help as much with those kids, or what exactly?
I think that it's easy to reach any child. That a child that's suffering doesn't want to be suffering, and a child that has a parent in prison might not have lost their parent as an elementary age child. They might have lost their parent in middle school or in high school, and it's still a huge loss to them, and a different loss because maybe they had a more stable relationship with that parent in elementary school, and now it's a loss in middle school. So the way that we approach it is very individual for the child, and the way we approach, again, the programs for the different ages is designed to meet their need and to offer a program that is really relevant to them at that age group.
Now, I know New Hope has been gearing up year after year to try to serve more kids. You mentioned this large high school class that just graduated. Are you tracking back, say, 3-4 years to see if they finish their post-secondary education? Do you see if they're making it in the community? Is that a part of your tracking process, or is that yet to happen?
That's something that we've started to do. So work when I came on 5 years ago, we started really tracking our outcomes in a way that was a lot more strategic and having a code for each child and then tracking that child year after year, both on their outcomes and anecdotally in journals that our staff are writing. And then looking at, okay, this is how much they've increased in self-efficacy and self-determination, et cetera, the measures that we use. And then looking at after graduation, where our children are, and hopefully helping them meet their needs as they navigate post-secondary education.
Have you had kids come back and be a part of the program?
We have. That's one of our favorite things. We have a counselor and training program for our juniors and seniors, and they get to come and work with the younger kids, and they're so excited about it. And once they go through that CIT program, they get to come back and work as a paid staff member. And this summer, we had, I believe, 6 or 7 paid staff members that were students that are in college that are coming back this summer to work with our children who have parents in prison at our summer camps.
My guest today is Lindsay Frey-Geyer. She's the executive director for New Hope. New Hope is a nonprofit offering services to children with incarcerated parents. They're serving kids from 5 through 18 at sites in the Broken Arrow Union and Tulsa Public School District camps during the summer. And you must have a huge staff of trained volunteers to be able to handle 400 kids during the course of a year.
Yes, we rely heavily on our volunteers because, again, we want to really encompass the lives of these kids. We don't want to be an agency that hands a kid a backpack or gives them a meal and sees them on their way. We really want to encompass their lives, and that's why we're seeing the great change that we're seeing is because we touch them at multiple points. We know that the more points of contact we have with a child statistically, the better their outcomes are going to be.
Are you looking for volunteers now?
Absolutely. That's the right question, Rich. We are always looking for volunteers. There's a lot of ways that people can get involved, from once a month coming and serving at a holiday event or a family gathering, to coming every week and serving as a mentor in our after-school elementary or middle or high school groups. If you'd be interested in volunteering, you can email us directly or go to our website, www.newhopeoklahoma.org. And then there's a volunteer sheet on there. We'll get back with you really quickly.
I assume if anybody wants to learn more about the organization, newhopeoklahoma.org is perhaps the best way to contact you.
Yes, it sure is. And again, in order to reach more of there are 26,000 children in the state of Oklahoma who have a parent in prison. And that's not including children whose parents are held in state jails outside of the state of Oklahoma, federal prisons or jails. So we know that there's a huge number of kids that are impacted here in the Tulsa community and throughout the state, and we'd love to reach more of them. But in order to do that, we need more community support and more volunteers.
Now, you're serving just the Tulsa area, which is brilliant, but are there other programs like this around the state? Are you collaborating with other programs around the state, or is this perhaps the only one?
There are programs around the state. We serve children throughout the state in our
summer camps.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. Thank you. And in our retreats. In our after-school programs, we're only currently in the Tulsa area. There is Girl Scouts Beyond Bars, which does visitation to mothers at women's facilities, and they work throughout the state with children of prisoners. And there's also the Big Brothers Big Sisters program that does mentoring for a group of children through the AMACHI program. And those are both great programs working with children of prisoners. And our approach is a little different in terms of we don't offer mentoring specifically one-on-one, or we don't do visitation. We focus surely on
these group situations.
Right. And on the children specifically, as opposed to maintaining that relationship with their parent. Sometimes the relationship with their parent that's incarcerated is very important to their well-being. And sometimes it's better for them to really be in that environment that's fostered with the caregiver that they're living with.
Yeah. Now, the reason for this organization is to break the cycle of generational incarceration. Do you feel like programs like this can really make a dent in that number? Because when you look at the numbers, it's just generation after generation after generation. You think more programs like this can really break that cycle?
Absolutely. I know that they can. We've seen that they can. And prevention programs like New Hope and others have impacted the lives of children. They have caused them to change paths and to go down a path that's successful. We know that we can end generational incarceration one child at a time. That's what's exciting about the work we get to do. But it is a staggering number, as you've said. And we do need more agencies and more communities to support this great cause and this great need in our Oklahoma Society.
All right. Lindsay, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lindsay Frey-Geyer is the executive director for New Hope Oklahoma. New Hope gets underway today with 10 community-based groups as well as 12 school-based groups in the Tulsa Public Schools, Union, and Broken Arrow School Districts. For more information, visit newhopeoklahoma.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
To review, my dad is 87. He lives in Vegas. He bowls twice a week. He goes to the gym, casinos. He collects two-for-one buffet coupons. He argues with his friends over Medicare. He knows it's socialized medicine. They think it's something else. He's right. It's wonderful. He's on 9 different medications, but he's fine. For 87, he's more than fine. In fact, while he's 87, he's as healthy as any 67-year-old. He feels 47. He acts 27, but he is 87, which is the problem. He lives alone, and it's time for him to move closer. He needs someone to eat lunch with, needs someone to take his glasses off when he falls asleep, needs someone to find the 2-year-old bag of potatoes that are now in a liquid form in his cabinet. He needs someone to be there so he doesn't die alone. So how does a son say this to his father? On coming to Oklahoma, where he'd come if he came anywhere, he has his reservations. Hey, ba, you got casinos? Hey, ba, you got Jews? Hey, ba, you got Panera? You promise? Yeah. If not, I'll call my lawyer as soon as he gets out of jail. It's his favorite joke. I asked him one time, you ever think about dying, Dad? Yes, though, a little. All he ever says on the subject is, you get me back to your mother. My mother is buried on the south shore of Long Island. His plot is right beside her. He tells me in dreams she sometimes stands by his bed and asks, what are you doing? If I move, he tells me, she won't be able to find me. My dad was 83 when he bought his last house. He got a 30-year mortgage. He said he probably wouldn't live that long. Yeah, probably. It's a sticking point now and an excuse. He bought it for $150,000. Home values in Vegas dropped, so the house last year was worth $120,000. Now it's worth $180,000. Hey, Dad, great news. You can get $180,000 for the house. I want $200,000. Based on what? Nothing. I just want it. You're just making up these figures. Yeah, I know. I took him once to see my grandmother, his mother-in-law, in a nursing home many years ago. Later, he talked of the smells and hearing and the mumblings and the screamings. I'm not going into a home, he told me ever since. I don't care what, I'm not going into a home. It's not a home, I say to him about the place in Tulsa, in my best Tony Soprano. It's a retirement community. I'll just be a burden on you. Dad, running out to Vegas every time your printer doesn't work is more of a burden than you living down the block and me picking you up and driving you to Panera. Yeah, I know, but I like it here. I'm fine. I'm really fine. How do you argue with that? I remember my mother once told me, don't worry about your father. He puts his pants on every morning, one leg at a time without you. He's fine. But she was alive to make sure it happened. She was around to see, as she once put it, his stomach moving up and down so she could tell he was okay. So how do you tell your father he can no longer be alone when he clearly can be alone? When his pants still go on, that it's your fears, not his, that keeps driving this conversation. You know, Dad, you collapse in the kitchen, it'll be hours before anyone can get there. So where am I going anyway? I'll wait. How do you argue with that? We agreed that months before his 88th birthday, he'd put the house up for sale. I want one more year, Beth. One more year. How do you argue with that? That was last year. Okay, Dad, I said a few weeks ago, it's August. We put the house on the market, right? That was the deal. I've changed my mind. I'm waiting until I'm 95. You can change your mind. We had a deal. Yeah? Talk to my lawyer. And so it goes.
Barry Friedman is a writer and columnist for The Tulsa Voice, a stand-up comic, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.